to A Brit in LA with star of stage and screen, Lauren Samuels. Each week, she'll be navigating different areas of the US entertainment industry after swapping London for La La Land. She'll be meeting inspiring figures who are achieving their own Hollywood dreams.
Hi guys, well sadly we're almost at the end of our second series together. Boo hoo, I hear you cry. What a fun ride I've had, and I hope that you've had too, learning from the experts how Hollywood really works. And today's show is going to be another entertaining lesson. Winning an Oscar, guys, is not just about giving the best performance or making the best movie, believe it or not. You need a campaign strategy too, in order to make sure the voters and media see your film and help spread the word. And that is where my guest today comes in. Catherine Lynn Scott is a leading publicist who has helped clients achieve 21 Oscar nominations and 5 wins in just the last few years. She's worked on films with the likes of Javier Bardem, Chris Rock, Brie Larson and Riz Ahmed, as well as on TV award campaigns with stars from Downton Abbey and Ted Lasso. And now she's explaining her methods here to us. Catherine, welcome to A Brit in LA.
Thank you, and congratulations on being in your second series.
Thank you.
Wow, that's pretty fabulous.
Thank you so much. Now, in case people can't tell from your accent, you are also a Brit in LA. At least you are this week, because you're someone who works very much on both sides of the Atlantic. Your company is called London Flair PR, but you're shuttling back and forth to London all the time, it seems. How are you able to make such a challenging work schedule work?
You know, I think when you do it so often, it becomes normal, so normal that it's not really a big deal. You just go on a flight, you know, you can work on a flight, you can sleep on a flight, you can watch films on a flight. So I think I do it so often that I've probably been back and forth 5 times in the last 2 months.
Wow.
And I'm off to London again. So I don't know. I just think when you do it a lot, you get used to it. So
yeah, it feels like no big deal to you anymore.
Yeah, no big deal.
And I know some people are like, it's 11 hours. Like my mum, for example, when I first moved here, was like, it's an 11-hour flight. How will I ever cope with that? But like you say, you get used to it and then it feels like normal, right?
It does.
Yeah. Normal person just
getting on a plane. I don't know if the eight hour time difference ever really gets normal, but for the travel, it's fine.
How do you deal with jet lag with the time difference?
Well, I'm a good sleeper most of the time.
Melatonin. That's my trick. Just take melatonin.
Well, yeah, definitely a bit of melatonin. That does help. Although you can't get it in the UK.
I know. Mm. Such a shame. Mm. So the Oscar nominations are just a few weeks away. And I imagine this means that the build up to all of that is your busy season. Take us inside your work. What are you arranging and working on to give your clients the best chance?
Well, we actually start in September. So it's a 6 month for the Oscars in particular. It's a 6 month process. So you start in September. Obviously, that's a while ago now. And then you kind of work up to the shortlist. And then it's the shortlist to nominations to Oscars. So it's a lot longer period than you think. Mm. So you start off with, some films. And each film is really looked at completely differently, depending what it is. You know, we have animations, documentaries and live action, though we tend to do more live action, and each subject's different. So you really make a campaign around a film, but it depends on the film subject. So, you know, whether it's something, I mean, one film we have called Bazzy Gaga, the filmmaker, actually, she lived through the genocide in Rwanda. And there was a lady who was kind of a real champion, and she rescued lots of people while she was there, and she's made a story about that. So that's like a different story than, you know, about some kids. You know, I had a film a few years ago called Valve that was up for, that got nominated for an Oscar, and that was about two kids who were kind of playing tic for tac in a dangerous place. So, you know, it's very different depending on the film.
So it's like you will see the film and then approach each film with a different strategy,
very bespoke.
Right. Bespoke. That's a good word for it. I must admit, Catherine, I'm largely unfamiliar with how campaign season works. So it kind of blows my mind a bit. Why does someone going for an Oscar need a publicist like you? And how does it enhance their chances?
Well, you need the film to be seen, and you need the film to be seen by voters, Oscar voters, Academy voters. But you also want the film to be seen by journalists so that, you know, I look at it like this. You don't want it to just be for the Oscars. Yes, you do. And you want to get to the nominations you want to win. but it's such a platform. Even being shortlisted for an Oscar is such a huge honor. It can really help change your career. So, you know, use that period to get press for the film and, in essence, the filmmaker. Because for us, it's, yes, it's about the film, but you don't always hear, especially in short films, which I tend to work through more with the Oscars, you don't hear about the filmmakers behind the films as often as you do the film. So our job is to really get the filmmaker out there. I had a film last year that sadly didn't get to the shortlist. But yeah, because of all the press that we got for him and his name started to get out there, he got, I think, a couple of million funding for his feature. Mm. So, you know, yes, the aim is for the Oscars, but it can help in other ways. So, I mean, our job is really to make sure that people hear about the film, either bring it to the attention of the voters, ideally, but also through press coverage, because people will read that. And then for the long-term career goals of the filmmakers too.
Mm-hmm. Is it like political elections where there are like certain rules and restrictions that you need to operate under? You know, like you're not able to, I don't know, give the voters gifts or something like that. What are those rules, if any?
Oh, there are rules. You before the shortlist, you know, films qualify to be considered for the Oscars in two ways. Either they're in a film festival that wins, that has an Oscar qualifying award, and you have to win that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can screen it in a theatre for a week in America and certain cities, usually like New York, LA, a few others, and you can qualify it that way. So those are the two ways that you can actually qualify.
Mm-hmm. And so as your job, is there anything that you sort of have to stick by, like really restrictions?
They can't mention that they're Oscar qualified. Even though they are, you can't mention that before the shortlist.
Ah.
So you could say, I won an Oscar qualifying award, but you can't say it's Oscar qualified. You can't use the Oscar logo. You can't do any of that. So you have to kind of keep it way apart from that. You can't contact Academy voters in any way, shape or form.
Right. Yeah. You can't just be like, oh.
So it's not even about giving them gifts, because that's impossible. But you can't email them. You can't call them. You can't do anything.
You can't accidentally run into them while you're walking your dog. Or...
Well, you know, it depends which way you walk. No. But no, you can't. So I think it's, you know, I mean, I have a lot of clients that have, a lot of my past winners and nominees are voters. And to be fair, they'll come to me and they'll say, oh, can you recommend some films? You know, I'm not going to not tell them if they ask me, but there are official ways of getting in touch with them.
Right. Okay. So you have to stick to the book, as it were. And is it, this might be a stupid question, I don't know, is it the actor or the person that engages you personally, or is it the studio?
There's a mixture. I mean, usually it's the director or producer. I'm working with a studio for one film this year. I'm working with Riz Ahmed, our film that won an Oscar this year for The Long Goodbye, and his publicist contacted me about another film because she liked what we did, so I'm working with her and the filmmaker. So it really depends. I mean, lots of people come to us in different ways. Sometimes distributors will come and ask us to work on their films, so it's many different sources.
Mm-hmm. You've got an incredible track record of landing nominations and wins, but not just for the Oscars, for the BAFTAs too. To what do you attribute this incredible run of success?
I guess it's some lots of hard work and a bit of luck.
I'm glad you said that, yeah.
But I think it's also just, I guess over time, I kind of want to touch wood because, you know,
because
the nominations are coming up. It's about just getting a feel for what kind of Oscar films the voters might like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very different for the BAFTAs. The films that normally would go for a BAFTA, although we've had a lot of crossovers between films that are nominated for both, but generally the type of film that wins a BAFTA is different to the type of film that wins an Oscar.
How so?
It's like for an Oscar, the easiest way I can describe it is, you know, you're watching a film, you know, 20 minutes or so, and it has to feel like it's a feature, and it has to be perfect in every single way. You have to, I mean, you don't have the luxury of a feature of 5-10 you know, minutes getting into the film,
mm-hmm.
you know, getting into, waiting for you to kind of get into it. You have seconds, really. So you have to be, you know, you have to, within a minute, you need to be absorbed in that story. Mm-hmm. And that's tough, I think, for filmmakers to do. And you have to be the whole way through in tuned. And then, you know, it has to be great cinematography, great acting. I mean, it has to be a brilliant story. And I think that's really difficult to make in a short film because you've got very limited time. And there's a big gap between a good film and a great one.
Mm-hmm.
A big gap. I see so many films and I'm like, I mean, they're good, but they're just not good enough. And then you see a great one and you're blown away from it and you can't stop thinking about it. And that's when I kind of just know I have that feeling. And also the style. I mean, they tend to, I mean, some comedies do get through, but not that many.
Mm.
It's more like a gripping story with social issues often, that type of thing. So it's just kind of seeing that film where you're like, wow. And if, you know, if I'm blown away by it, then, you know, you'd hope the voters would be too.
Yeah, it's like a gut reaction that you have. Do the filmmakers have to sort of audition for you in a way? Because I imagine at this point you get to choose the films that you work on.
We do. We definitely do, which is a great place. And I'm grateful for being in that place. We do turn down a lot of films because, you know, we can only take so many, and I wouldn't want to. Unless I'm really honest, you know, I don't take a film for money. I take a film because I'm passionate about it. So if I really love the film and I really like the story and I really want to get behind it, then I do. And if I don't, I don't think it's fair for anyone to take it on. So then I just say no. But we do, especially I think because we won this year again, it's just been nuts.
Yeah.
I can't, like, we've been sent so many films and I'm just like, nope. But I say no in a nice way.
Of course.
I'm trying to say it in a nice way.
So do you and other publicists ever sort of fight for certain films? Is that a thing that happens?
I kind of get the final say.
Yes, I
but
like
we do
that.
We have a, you know, we kind of have a board as such. You know, if I'm not 100% sure of a film, but I like it, I'll send it to you know, some of the other publicists to see what they think. But, you know, generally, I think you just know. You just have that feeling this thing's, you know, it's like any film you go and watch or anyone listening watches, you know, you watch a film and you're like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
You have to have that feeling.
So that's the criteria, I suppose, that you're definitely looking for, that like gut reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've done especially well, as you mentioned, in the short film category, including the win in 2022 for the best live action short for Riz Ahmed's The Long Goodbye. Such a powerful short. But what do you think makes a great short? And is it any different than what makes a great feature?
No, it's not different. It's just...
harder?
You just have such a short time.
Yeah.
So I think it's harder to make. And kind of really what I said before, it's like you have such a short time to get the viewer engaged.
Yeah, you have to grip
and
them.
And you have a lower budget most of the time. So you really have to make a film usually on a lower budget. Not always low. I mean, it depends, you know, how much money you've been able to get. But you have to make a film that really feels like a feature and a short and absorbs you the whole way through. And that's, I think it's really, really difficult. And I take my hat off to people who make amazing short films, because you have to, you know, a beginning, a middle and an end in 20 minutes, plus defined characters and interesting storyline.
Mm.
Well, I mean, I can't imagine doing that. I'm glad I'm not a filmmaker.
Some are even less than 20 minutes as well, aren't they?
Yeah, a lot of 15, yeah. But I'm glad I'm not a filmmaker.
But I completely
That's
know
a lot of pressure.
Yeah. I know what you mean when you watch, speaking of, just because we were talking of The Long Goodbye, it does.
That was
pack...
11 minutes.
Exactly. I know, and it packs such a punch, doesn't it? I mean, I remember watching that film and being like... Christ, like, it's like, you know, wow.
That's what it's about. It's about watching a film where you go away and you can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's something that makes you feel in whichever way.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go away and, you know, a good film you can't stop thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. What are some of the films that you have in the running this time around?
Well, I could talk about some of them. We've got a great film called North Star, which stars Coleman Domingo. It has Kevin Bacon in it. Malcolm Getz, and it's a fantastic story about a rancher whose husband is ailing, he's sick, and they're trying to make ends meet. And it's really just about a love story and someone that will do anything for the person that they're with. But they happen to be in a same-sex marriage, and the sister's very religious, and she's trying to kind of fight against it. And it's kind of those things going on. But it's, I mean, the performance that Coleman does is like incredible. I also have a documentary called Tech to the Future, which is directed by Sandra Minetti, and Francis Hellier is the producer. And that's really cool, because I don't know if the Brits, maybe not the Americans, but the Brits might know a show called Tomorrow's World. I used to love watching that show.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been missing. We haven't had that kind of show. But it really is about talking about technology of the future. And, you know, we've come along so far, haven't we? Just even having, you know, mobile phones that you can video call. And it talks about the, you know, when it was in Back to the Future, the film, you know, that's what they had then. And, you know, it just really talks about so many things, flying cars. And so that's a really fun documentary. I have an animation that's super cute called Laika and Nemo. And it's about an astronaut and a deep sea diver, and they both feel like outcasts, but they kind of meet, and it's just so cute.
Oh,
it's so cute. So, but there's quite, you know, there's quite a few films that we have. I mean, not masses, but we have, you know, a good number.
To look out for all of those. It's exciting. It's exciting times when the Oscar season comes around and you get to go, ooh, it's all these things that you need to watch, you know. You're also heavily involved with film festivals like Rain Dance, which is in the UK, and Holly Shorts, which is here in LA. Mm. What place do film festivals play in launching careers and award campaigns?
Huge, especially both of those festivals are Oscar qualifying film festivals, which means, in case people don't know, is that they have been given the right to give an award that will qualify them for an Oscar, whether it be for a live action short, a documentary short, or an animation.
Mm-hmm.
They're all short films, but they have those. So if you win that award in that festival, actually one of our films, Sandstorm, that we have, won their Oscar qualifying award, which then enabled them to qualify for the Oscars, to go for the Oscars, which is really cool. But, you know, it's the way that people see your film, and it's the way to reach to audiences. And also with the accolades, it really kind of is a pat on the back for all the hard work you've been doing. But the main thing is, it's just the audiences can see it. And, you know, making films one thing, and I think you can't really be, when you're making a film, I think it's hard to judge how other people see it. And I think sitting in an audience with other people watching your film and then hearing their reactions, you know, it must be so cool for the filmmaker, but it's just nice to see, you know, how people feel, and then them coming up to you afterwards. I mean, so many films we've done, they've come up and they've said, oh my God, this film has really touched me. And it's so important in that way. But also the accolades, you know, obviously once you start winning film festivals, it makes it easier then to perhaps go on and get a distributor and sell the film. And there's quite a few films, you know, shorts do sell. I was on one of my trips back to London a few weeks ago, and I saw two of my shorts on the plane. One was Roy. And the other one was, I can't remember the name, but it was by the same people who did one for The Silent Child, Rachel Shenton and Chris Overton. Yeah. That was the film that won the Oscar with a death kill.
Yes, I remember that.
Maisie Sly. But I saw two of those films I'd worked with, which is always fun, you know. Mm. But actually, in another feature that I'd worked with, but they, you know, so there is a big market for films. So you want them to be seen. And it's a great way of getting distributors to see it as well.
So with the film festivals, for some people that don't know, including myself, if you have made a short, you're then able to just enter it into any of these film festivals, but only some of them are Oscar nomination worthy.
Qualifying. Yeah. So basically there are hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of film festivals. Mm. I think there's only around 100 or so Oscar qualifying film festivals.
Right.
And they're hard to get into. Mm. I think that Holly Shorts had 9,000 films apply.
Wow.
They showed 200 or so, but they're not all then going to win, you know.
Yeah,
they had,
of course.
So it's, I mean, even to win an Oscar qualifying award is tough, because you first got to get into the festival, and then you have to hopefully be nominated for that award and then win it. So it's really not an easy feat to do. But also it's quite interesting, because I get sent so many films that have won an Oscar qualifier. And I watched then, and I'm like, how?
Oh, really?
How did that happen?
That's so interesting.
Well, the programmer's on drugs. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I'm joking. But, you know, there's something going on here that's a bit weird. Because you see them and you're like, what? And then you could have an amazing film, which, but, you know, I guess films are subjective, aren't they? That's the opinion. But it's difficult to do that, to get. But, you know, some of my films, I have a film called Mashari, which is up for an Oscar, and they have won like 4 or 5 qualifiers.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes that can happen. You can win. And that happens with quite a few films. But again, with some none. I think with Riz Ahmed's film, he was only in 2 festivals and they won Holly Shorts last year.
Wow.
And that qualified them.
And then they won.
And then
Journey. Oh my God, that must have seemed unbelievable to them, considering, like you say, how many festivals there are, how many people enter each festival, how many even qualify for these things. It's insane. In your experience, what do actors often fail to understand about PR and dealings with the press?
Realism, being realistic. You know, I think it depends on the actor. Like, I'm not going to name names, but, you know, I've worked with actors that, I mean, most of my actors are in shows that, you know, like you say, Ted Lasso, Downton Abbey. I've had actors in Twilight, lots of films and TV shows, and they've been doing things for a while. But, you know, sometimes we take on people that are just starting. And I think some of them assume because they're in a few episodes of something that they will be in GQ magazine and they'll be in, you know, the front of Marie Claire. And I think you have to just be very realistic and say, you know, my job is to build you up. Like, you're not going just because you're in something, it doesn't mean, and you can get them something great. And then they think everything's going to be at that level, but it's a building process. And most people will understand that. You set the boundaries and say, this is what I think will happen. We'll build up and you'll see. And, you know, you can get some great things as well. But it's not guaranteed when you're new. And I think some people just, the odd person, not many, just don't get that. They don't realize that they're building, you know, you're building them up to be bigger.
Yeah.
It's a stepping stone.
It's a journey. Yeah, exactly. My next question will be, is it you that's, would you seek up-and-coming actors, or is it something that they come to you for, or their managers, perhaps?
No, I wouldn't really seek them. Mm. And I don't, you know, I tend to not work with a ton of actors.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I do. We do mostly films, but we do also work with a lot of actors, and some we've been working with for many, many years. Hakeem K. Kazem, who's in Dangerous Liaisons at the moment, he has been, I've been working with him for 15 years, I think. Oh, wow. But so there are actors that we do work with, and we do get approached a lot, and some I work with and some I won't. But some are just not, I mean, some just don't have big enough roles.
Yeah, of course.
Just being in one episode of something's not enough.
Yeah. You just mentioned Ted Lasso and Downton, so I've got to ask you, let's talk about your work with television stars. Tell us all about working with the actors from two of, I have to say, my favourite shows, Ted Lasso and Downton Abbey.
Well, Jeremy Swift, who stars in Ted Lasso as Higgins, is just the sweetest person. He's so fun. Like, you know,
I'm so glad to hear
fun,
that. Yeah.
His character's fun, but he is so lovely. Like, he's just a darling to work with and a joy. And I just love it. And Raquel Cassidy, who stars in Downton Abbey, who plays the maid, she is also lovely. So I think I'm quite lucky. I mean, most of my clients are really, really sweet. But you know what they say? I don't know if you heard this. If actors are on their way up or on their way down, they're not necessarily nice, but the people who made it are generally lovely.
Well, you know what they say, you can't hurt people on the way up because you will fall, right? But that's nice to hear, because I imagine some actors can be quite difficult to work with, so that's nice to hear.
Most of the actors I have, now and again you get annoying directors.
Okay.
But most of the actors I work with are super lovely.
And how did you first get interested in films and television? And what were your, you know,
I've got an interesting story actually about kind of how
great
this company came about. So I was an actress for 16 years.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
I'm not going to tell you my acting name because you don't need to look up all the films I got killed in. I got married.
Sure.
Or did one episode of. But anyway, so I first moved to LA as an actress, and I was working, but I was never really, you know, I was one of the 2% of, or no, the bigger percentage, sorry, of not working that much. I was doing, you know, the odd things. I ended up teaching in an acting school, career coaching there, and really loved doing that. And long story short, my money job when I lived in London was working in corporate PR. So I helped my friend out who was running the BAFTAs, and I just had to literally meet Sean Penn from the car, walk into his table, and that was my job.
Oh, my God.
But his people were IDPR, and they were like, oh, you're really good. And suddenly I had like this epiphany of, oh, perhaps I can do entertainment PR. And I was quite lucky that my first, I had a lot of actor friends, so my first clients were in Pirates of the Caribbean. So I had kind of good actors to start with. So I started off with a niche of only doing Brits in LA. Uh-huh. And I was known for that. And I got quite a lot of actors that way. And then the first year when I was at the Oscars with my film, Sean Penn was giving out the best film award. So I thought it was kind of a nice full circle that he's the reason I kind of started. And then the first time at the Oscars, he was giving that out. So it was really
I
cool.
I love that. And I also love, of course, that all of your clients were Brits in LA.
They were.
The title of this podcast, of course.
And I still have quite a few Brits, to be honest. I mean, I'd say 80 or 90% of my filmmakers are American. But yeah, no, none of my actors are American. They're all British still.
Ah, I love that. I love that. So you almost accidentally fell into the publicity side of the business.
Yeah, almost accidentally, exactly. And then it just worked, and then we'll be 15 years this year. So
wow, and you've been
February,
so incredibly successful. I love that story. Do you still have a passion for acting?
No. Do you know what? It's one of these weird things, right? Because I thought, you know, you're an actress, right?
Yeah.
You think that's all I could ever do.
Yes.
It's my total love, and I'm going to do that for the rest of my life. And I did one horror film after I started that someone had asked me to do. And I thought I would really miss it, but I don't, because I feel like my job is helping people and helping their careers, and that's really satisfying.
Yeah.
And also I get to do really fun things and meet lots of great people, and you know, it can be challenging at times in an exciting way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the best move ever.
Yeah. Wow. No looking back here. Yeah, no. Well, can I draw on all of your British and Hollywood experience to get some advice from you for me and others like me who have maybe recently moved to LA from England to chase mm-hmm. their dreams? What is the best way to go about achieving them?
I don't know if I'm the best person anymore. If I think back to my career coaching days, I think it's really about building your CV. It's not easy to come here and go straight into to being in a TV series. But if you're not union, do some non-union work, build up your resume, build up your showreel, get people to, you know, see your work. Like I say, I'm not an agent, so I don't think I'm the best person to advise, really. But that's just going back to my career coaching days, what I would say. But yeah, I can't really say more than that because it's been
a long
time.
There's so much going on in LA, I think, for the entertainment industry, like compared to England, certainly in my opinion anyway, like so many of these Actors Access and Backstage, all these
casting, is that still there?
Yeah, all these casting sites that are going on. And yeah, there is so much work out there, even if it's just student films. Some of the best film schools in the world are here in LA.
I did a lot of student films to start with, and I kept quite a few of them on my acting reel for a while because they were good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think that is inadvertently excellent advice from you there.
I'm kind of guessing. I'm going on a whim.
Yeah, to keep building up your CV.
Yeah, because when I work with people, they've already got the work. I get a lot. Actually, I get a lot of emails from people saying, oh, I need to promote myself. And I said, well, what are you doing? And they're not doing anything yet, so it's not the right time.
Yeah, yeah. But when they are doing something.
I mean, I can tell you about maybe when the right time to get a publicist is. That's probably
that
makes more
would be
sense
very helpful,
than,
yeah,
than me advising on acting, as I'm not really in that position. But really, it has to be, I mean, a film that's in a film festival, that's good. Generally, it's better to do something that has been in, you know, in one of the Oscar qualifying film festivals, not one of the others, but you could approach a publicist then. But as an actor, I would say minimum 2 episodes of a series, minimum, or you could be a guest if that guest star is really, you know, important to pivotal to the story. Mm-hmm. It's really, you know, a really good story, and the actor is really, you know, the person, the character is really important. But I'd say 2 or 3 minimum episodes of something, or if you're in a feature, you know, it has to be stuff that's not going to end up on the cutting room floor. But you don't always know that, do you? So it has to be enough scenes and also a character that's really taking the story along.
That's great advice, because I think, like you said earlier, some up and coming actors might be under the impression that, you know, you would just take on anyone that's sort of up and coming or whatever. But there you go. So a very good part in a feature, or at least 2 episodes in something excellent.
With a decent role, not just a few lines.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not just a good
no
morning.
Under fives.
It's been so wonderful to chat to you, Catherine. But I just have to ask before we leave, where would you like to see your career go in the future? What further ambitions remain for you?
Okay, I'm going to put this out there.
Put it out there.
Well, this year was the first year we won an Oscar and a BAFTA in the same year, which I was very happy about. But I've heard that no publicists have won 10 Oscars in a row. I've had 5 in 7 years, but it wasn't in a row. So I would love to have 10 Oscars in a row for my clients, along with 10 BAFTAs at the same time.
Dream
That's
big.
My goal. But you know what? I think anything's possible if you put your mind to it and you work really hard, because, you know, any publicist will tell you after Oscar season, you probably lose your voice. You're completely knackered. That's the best word. Tired's not even the right word. So I think, you know, you really do work a lot of hours and put your all into it. And I think it would be nice to achieve not just me, but for my clients. The biggest thrill that I ever have is when someone comes off stage having won an Oscar. There's a part called the Oscar. It's like an Oscar walk. And you walk to the lift where they've just come up and they've won their Oscar. And through that walk, they have pictures of all the old films of people that have won Oscars before. And I always tell them, walk slowly, because you've got to take, you know, it's a crazy rush, like,
yeah,
and a shock that they've just won an Oscar. And then someone else could be walking past, some huge star can walk past while you're going, you know, past with your Oscar, going back to the theatre. But I say, walk really, really slowly, take it in, because this moment is huge. And, you know, let's hope it happens again, but you never know, just take it in. But for me, the best part of my whole job is seeing their faces. Like, seeing that face always almost brings tears to my eyes. I'm like, wow. Like, having, you know, I didn't make the film, but, you know, I've hopefully had a good part, or I've made an effort enough to help them get there. Obviously, I don't make them get there, but I help. So seeing their faces is like the best part of my job.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm just watching your face now. I'm like, oh, I can imagine. It must be like so, so thrilling. And while we're all about chasing dreams on this podcast. So Catherine Lynn Scott, thank you for all of your amazing words of wisdom and for telling us all about your incredible career and for coming on and being a guest on A Brit in LA.
Well, thank you for having me.
After recording this episode, I chatted to someone who has something far better than an Oscar, guys. My longtime friendship. He's going to love that. But here he is, actor and singer Noel Sullivan of Hearsay fame. Let's hear what he had to say about my chat with Catherine.
I think I felt stupid that I didn't realise that there was such a thing as like an Oscar strategist. Like, I don't know why I didn't realise.
Well, they're those little kind of nuts and bolts of the industry that you wouldn't think about, were you? Because you just see the end product. You just see people on the telly or people going around red carpets and stuff. You don't think that someone is planning, like, the timing and the run-up and all of that stuff. That's a great job to have. Especially if you come from an actor's background as well. So, like, she had all those years of an actor and then she's like, oh, I know what I'll do now. It's like she, having seen it from both sides, must mean that she's kind of doubly equipped, you know?
Yeah, I think I just like, you see the like the Oscar movies or whatever, and I never really thought about who it was that decides that they're going to win an Oscar or even be nominated for an Oscar, right? The first thing is actually getting the nomination. And so, yeah, we spoke about all the work that obviously goes on behind the scenes of almost, I suppose, like a political campaign.
Yeah, like a whip who's going around and being like, okay, here you go. We need to, you need to vote for this person because it's the Academy members that vote for the Oscar winners, right?
Yeah, but there's obviously got lots before that to do with, and I asked her as well, I was like, are there like rules and regulations? Like, can you not like offer someone a cheeky gift or like, you know, run into the max accidentally and like...
I think as with politics, that's probably massively illegal, isn't it?
Probably looked down upon, you know, yeah. You know, to like
frowned upon.
Yes, accidentally run into, you know, an Oscar, someone on the board while they're walking their dog and be like, oh, so funny to run into you here. here's a gift.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you dropped something.
Yeah.
No, you dropped something. We'd be good at that. It's like being a spy. We'd be good at that. Yeah. Ask her if she needs any PAs.
What would that position be called, though?
I don't know. Oscar thief.
The accidental Oscar thief.
Yeah. That's a great idea for a film. There we go.
The accidental Oscar thief. Done. Yeah. That'll win the Oscars. Nominations.
So, yeah. Well, she wants another Oscar, doesn't she? She's had how many Oscar winners?
She's such a boss. Five. Is it five? No, or seven nominations, five wins. So she wants to get 10. In a row, because this has all been in like 7 years. I tell you what, she's like an absolute boss of a woman. Just one of those that you're like, yes, you're just like smashing life. And actually we ended chatting about when would be the time for an actor to approach a publicist, right, to work with.
Yeah. I like that. I see how you've like snuck that in there, like, hi.
No, I'm not even close to that. I'm not even close to that. She was like, they need to have worked on at least one big feature film and be like, you know, a proper featured role in a big feature film or have at least a good couple of episodes of a big TV show, basically, under their belt to approach. So sadly, Noel.
Not for now. But hey, keep those digits. You never know when you'll need them.
Well, exactly. Well, quite. Yeah. So I like that I got that in at the end there. I'm not ready then. I'm not ready yet then, Catherine. All right. Thank you. Just so I'm aware. I'm doing God's work. I'm asking for all the actors out there that think they're big enough to approach a publisher.
Yeah. Because they would all be doing the same thing as you were doing in your situation. So this is important. This is important work.
It's important work, Noel. Exactly. All the actors out there, stand down. Stand down. You cannot approach a publicist yet. Although I would love that job, like an Oscar strategist or like a PR, you know, I would actually love it. So I love that she actually found starting in acting and then found this like love for this kind of the industry and it is now absolutely smashing that.
See, this is good as well, because you're also, before you went to LA, you must have had like preconceived ideas of what you were going to do as an actor. And now you're probably seeing other areas of the entertainment industry that you think, oh, you know, in 10 years' time when I'm done with this, I might have a crack at that, or, you know.
Exactly. So watch this space, Noel.
Oh, I shall.
I will go to the Oscars, but perhaps not as an actor. You never know. You never know. Anyway, yeah, see you soon.
All right, bye.
You've been listening to A Brit in LA with me, Lauren Samuels. Thank you to my wonderful guest, Catherine Lynn Scott. Thanks to my mate, Noel Sullivan. And most of all, thank you to you for taking time out of your day to listen. It would be great to get your help continuing the success of this podcast. So if you've enjoyed it and you're listening on Spotify or Google, then go on, click those cheeky 5 stars. If you're listening on Apple or Audible, then please leave a review of the show. I would love to hear what you think of A Brit in LA and what you'd like to see from the show in future seasons. Remember, you can always get in touch with me via our website, abritinla.fm. Have a wonderful week until we meet again, friends. And of course, wherever you are in the world, go for those dreams. TTFN.
Well, wasn't that amazing? It was created and produced by podcast partners. They're really lovely people and rather good at all this podcasting guff. Find out more at podcastpartners.com.